You're listening to The Christian Book Show. Real authors, real discussions, real issues. Books are about ideas. As believers, our ideas ought to be better. Our stories more compelling. We're here to spread ideas that lead to life. Our Savior made the religious establishment nervous and gave hope to the common people. We're here to do the same. Christian authors, leaders, and influencers share their message. Let's talk to the author.
Hi, folks. Welcome to my conversation with author Chris Maxwell and his new book, Underwater: When Encephalitis, Brain Injury, and Epilepsy Change Everything. I want to read a little bit of the back cover, and I want to tell you a little bit about Chris before we get into the conversation, and then I want to introduce Chris. Let me read from the back cover. Encephalitis almost ended Chris Maxwell's life. The scar tissue in his brain and life with epilepsy made him and his family and friends feel like the life they'd known changed suddenly and permanently. For Maxwell and the staggering number of people facing traumatic brain injuries, epilepsy, or other painful encounters, life is experienced through a different lens. Names are tough to remember. Medication is a common acquaintance. Exhaustion, seizures, and mood swings are daily traveling companions. Maybe you can relate. Maybe you know about encephalitis, epilepsy, or another type of brain damage. Maybe you're a caregiver, not sure of how to come ashore yourself. Maybe your story is different, but the feeling is the same. Depression, disability, or disease has changed everything. Maxwell's writing and the stories of others offer hope. Hope that you're not alone, even when your experience underwater seems to change everything. Let me tell you a little bit about Chris. And this is a very... Chris is so much more than this. I've known Chris for 5 years as a publisher and as a friend, and he's really quite accomplished in the journalistic and in the world of authors. And this, for a reason, I think, and Chris can address this. His bio in this book is very short, but I think it's very essential. It kind of cuts down to who Chris is at the core of who he is. Chris Maxwell is a husband, father, and grandfather. He's a writer, spiritual life director, international speaker, and a man who loves people. Chris hopes to be a voice of encouragement through words spoken, words written, and a life lived, at times, underwater. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. It's an honor to be with you.
I want to, before we start this discussion in earnest, I want to read a small passage from your book. And I want to kind of set the stage for this story, and then I want you to take the story from there. Is that okay?
Yes, that's good. Okay. Thanks.
This is from chapter 2 of the book, and it's the beginning. And the chapter is called Storms. Tell me your name. I'll try to remember it, but I won't. I'll forget it quickly. I know all the memory tricks. I've tried them. They worked for me before March 1996. Since then, the tricks do not work. Much of my brain doesn't work. I forget. I strategically plan a variety of techniques to remember. I remember for a moment, a brief moment. Soon I forget again. The rhyme, the image, the melody, the association. Scar tissue in my left temporal lobe doesn't follow the rules of the games. I hear leaders talk about how forgetting someone's name reveals poor leadership. I hope they don't have to learn the way I learned about forgetting, about brain damage, about epilepsy. Chris, take us back to March of 1996 and tell us where you were, what happened, and how that completely changed your life.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting moments to go back in time and to be there again. Because my life and the life of our family, the lives of so many of our friends, changed rapidly in March of 96. I was so healthy and just able to accomplish a lot of things, writing, speaking. I had a good memory, and I can look back and think of all my speaking engagements and not using notes, and I couldn't understand why so many people were dependent upon other things, writing notes down and not being able to remember how people struggled to recall someone's name or struggled to spell. And I was healthy. Debbie and I were raising our three sons, Taylor, Aaron, and Graham, and it changed so suddenly. I'd never really been sick much, and I became very sick that week. Debbie took me to a doctor. He did not know what was going on, and he sent me home, and I was falling to the floor, communicating in ways that did not make much sense. And eventually Debbie took me to the hospital, and we're very grateful that I was taken to what we believe was the right hospital at the right time. She took me to the emergency room. At first, Steve, they thought I had overdosed on drugs, and that was not the case. But a neurologist and a main physician were there, and they were looking at me, and they did not know if I would live. Okay, so this is 21 years ago, March 96. They did not think I would live. And Debbie thought she was just going to take me to the hospital. They would find something that's causing the problem. They would be able to solve the problem, and I would come home, and life would be the same. Well, life, what we didn't know is life would never be the same for us. I was, at that time, suffering from encephalitis. They did not know if I would live, but if I did live, because of the brain damage that it was causing, they thought I would never be able to communicate again or do all those things that I was doing for a living, communicating and caring for other people and writing. And fortunately, I believe the right people were there, the right neurologist, the right physician. Many people were praying. Many people were there to support the family. And even though I did change and I became a very different man, I am alive. I'm able to do a lot of things I never thought I would be able to do. But as Debbie calls me, I am her second husband. Same man, but different man. Same name, but very different because of the severe scar tissue in my left temporal lobe. This man who could remember so much so well now never remembers names, now cannot spell. And we think about, as I was listening to you mention this in my bio, this is Underwater is my eighth book, and we never knew if I would be able to write again.
Let's go back just a step, Chris. Tell us, what is encephalitis? What does it do to you? What did this disease or whatever it is, what happened to you that caused this?
Yeah, there are various types. I had herpes encephalitis. It's a viral infection. For some reason, we don't know exactly what caused it, but for some reason, my immune system did not fight it off, and it was killing me. And the damage that it was doing to the brain was destroying everything a little bit at a time. And because of that, because of the damage that the encephalitis was causing, that's why I now live with epilepsy, because I have severe scar tissue in the left temporal lobe of the brain. And so that part of my mind that I depended upon so much to be the scholar, to be the man with a great memory, that part of me is permanently damaged. And the reason I live with epilepsy now is because of the scar tissue. The electrical system of the brain can malfunction and it can trigger seizures at any time.
The disease, now it caused all this damage in your brain, so that when you finally came out of the effects of the disease and you came back to being physically able again, much of your mind was wiped out. Is that right?
There are so many stories from my past that I can't remember that occurred, but often I may remember the story in bits and pieces, but cannot remember the names of the people, again, in certain portions. And, it's not a small statement that Debbie makes when she calls me her second husband, because think about how it felt in the hospital. Here I am in the hospital. Okay, Chris is going to live. That's good news. But who will this Chris be? How will he have changed from the Chris that entered the hospital? So they're saving my life. That's good. They do the MRI on me. Brain damage is very severe. That will not change. Living with epilepsy, but also having to learn to live again. Steve, they were pleased that I would live, but think of being that age and being young and ready to raise your three sons and watching them grow up and coaching them in sports and all of that changing immediately, and me having to learn to eat again Debbie having to teach me how to brush my teeth and wash my hands, and I'm holding something, and it's a fork, and that's what you use to eat food. That was tough. Tough to learn again. Debbie can tell some amazing stories, and only bits and pieces I remember, but I can remember some of those moments when I was staring at food and not knowing what it was, how to eat it, to touch it with my hand. I did not know what a fork was. So think about how your life changed through a situation like that. What do you do in those moments?
not just
survival.
Not just your life, Chris, but the lives of your family have had to change dramatically.
You're right. Yeah, it's not singular. It's not just. It's plural. The lives of many people. I was leading a congregation of people and guiding them, and they were wonderful people. But as their leader, I changed. I was not the one that they trusted and depended upon. And all of the areas that I could function well, those were areas that now would be difficult for me. And think of my own relatives coming to visit me and me looking at them and not remembering their names.
So when Debbie calls you her new husband, it's not something lightly. It's not something we should take lightly or that she took lightly. It was really like having an entirely different person then. How did your boys react? How did your sons react when they found their new dad?
Each one of our sons responded differently because of their ages and because of their personalities. And it was an ongoing process. I say was, you know, this isn't over because I am still different. There are still so many ways that I depend upon the help and the assistance of other people, which really is something we all should do anyway, but we're reluctant to do that. But I didn't need to do that so much before. And I need that now. And especially, I mean, thinking of each one of our sons, Graham was the youngest. And even though he knew that me well, this is the main me. This is the main dad that he knows. Aaron, our youngest son, really struggled with that, with the change in his dad that he depended upon so much. And it was and is a long journey for Aaron in adjusting to this new man that was so dependent upon the assistance of others. And then there's Taylor, our oldest, who was young at that time, and he had to become the male leader of the family during my recovery time. And it affected each of them, but especially Taylor and Aaron, the oldest and the middle son.
Now Taylor's a musician, and like so many musicians, you write out of your heart, you write out of your life. And he wrote a song about that experience, didn't he?
Yes, and actually his song is called Underwater. And he wrote the song of how he felt as a son with this happening to his dad. And he felt like he was trapped underwater. It's a powerful song. The mood, the melody, the lyrics, they all take you to that place of just kind of exposing us how he felt, what he was experiencing and going through. So it was interesting, and you will remember this as you and I were talking about me writing this new book about my illness, because I've written about it before. This was going to be a totally different book, a different angle. But I wrote it thinking about that song, Underwater. That was sort of my working title. But as the book came along and as we were crafting and designing it, you and it was like everybody that we talked to were like, that needs to be the title of the book and not just your working title. And so Taylor gave us permission to use the title of his song, Underwater, as the title of the book, because that's how he felt. But honestly, Steve, that is how I feel, not just past tense when it happened, but so often struggling to remember, hoping to be seizure-free, just battling this sense of I am not capable of having the knowledge that other people have. Many of us with epilepsy or other types of disabilities, we feel underwater, desperate to come ashore.
Let me read something from a neurologist, your neurologist, Dr. Hal Pineless, and he's a well-known, renowned neurologist, and he says, as he wrote the foreword for this book, and part of his foreword says, as a doctor, if any neurologist looks at Chris's MRI of the brain and then sees Chris, they can't believe they're looking at the same person. Chris could easily have gone into a deep depression over his illness. His tenacity to stubbornly refuse to lose is what made him into the winner in life he is today. And Dr. Pineless goes on to say this to the general audience, and I think we want to talk about who this book is for, and I think Dr. Pineless kind of hits the nail on the head. Don't let epilepsy or your illness define you. You can succeed in life if you believe in what you're doing and are willing to fight for it. I hope this book will help you in your journey through life. Chris, you've lived with epilepsy, which was the result of this disease, encephalitis, and your brain injury. And you've lived with it well, and you've come back. You've written, what, 5 or 6 books since you came back? Have you written 8 books since
all,
you came back?
All
8 books. And so these abilities that you had before, that the doctors were sure that you would lose and you wouldn't even be able to communicate again, you've written all your 8 books after that. Why did you wait until now to write Underwater? And why'd you write it? Who did you write this for? Because I know you write for others more than you write for yourself.
Well, Steve, that's a good question. And honestly, because of so much that I'm doing now for people who live with epilepsy and their caregivers, I'm noticing that there's such a large audience out there who feel the way that Debbie and I felt, the people who feel the way that I felt, but not just me, my family and my friends and those who were around us. We feel alone, we feel isolated, and to use the title again, we feel underwater, not just the patients, but the caregivers. So as I'm speaking at these conventions, you know, I'll tell my story and I'll try to add humor to it so people can smile, and I'll tell them funny stories about how I had to learn to eat again, and Debbie wanted to use that to her advantage, and she would have loved to have tricked me to like more foods than I liked before, but unfortunately for her, I'm still the picky eater that I was pre-illness. But I tell some of those stories to get people to smile a little bit and let them know that I can laugh and I can also cry as I tell the nonfiction pain of my adventure underwater. And as I'm telling them the stories and they come up to me afterwards, the common thing that I hear as people come up to me, you know, I'm autographing books and they're buying books, but they look at me and they say, thank you, thank you. And I'm like, for what? What did you get out of this? And they'll say, I finally heard from somebody who lets me know that I am not alone. Mm. And Steve, so many of the people, we're talking about soldiers who are coming back from war with traumatic brain injury. Even though mine has occurred differently than theirs, we are similar because we know what it's like to forget regularly. We know what it's like to not belong in certain part of culture. And so I was thinking about those people. I was seeing their faces in my mind as I wrote this book. And I wrote it with this in mind. What do I wish I had known earlier? What would have been the type of book that would have been great for me and my family after this happened to us? So we crafted the book as we wanted it to be a cry with us, but also a smile with us type of book, but also providing the inspiration so that people who feel isolated will not give up and quit, as many people do, but also the information, some practical, you know, I'm not a neurologist. I'm not giving that type of advice on what medicine to take. I can't do that, but I can remind people the importance of how to rest well, how to write things down in case you might forget them, practical advice. But see, all of that is motivated by the desire to provide a book for people that we wish had been available to us when it happened.
You do a really neat thing in this book, Chris, and some of it is what you always do in your books, which is your perspective is, it's like the reader is looking, is inside your skull, looking out through your eyes in your perspective of the world. So you actually bring readers into your world. And another thing you do with your books is you include other stories so that you bring not just the reader into the world of your books, but you bring other people's voices and other people's stories into that. And that's something that your readers really deeply appreciate. And with a book like Underwater, with the subject matter it is, we can see other voices and other stories as well. Another thing I really love what you did in this book, Chris, is you've got these little asides, these little pullouts called What Worked For Me or What Works For Me. And they're little, just like simple little tips as far as what you do daily, little tricks that you have daily, or little things that help you, like take a nap or look in the mirror and see who you are and believe in that person and forgive people for the things that they've done to hurt you. So inside this book, in addition to pulling people into your story, you allow other voices mm-hmm. to come out, and you give practical help, just saying, hey, from a guy that's been in the trenches, this is what I do. This is what I've been doing for 20 yeah. years to help me make it through the day.
Yeah, I think it's important that we do that. We want to include other people in the dialogue, and we don't want this book to be the end of the story. We want to continue the conversation of life underwater. And honestly, some of my friends who wrote portions of this book, their stories, Steve, are just so powerful. I love their angle and their take. Their stories are different, but they know what it's like to feel underwater. When you think of the soldiers, when you think of the children, when you think of the parents who are dependent upon children to take care of them, their stories are so important because they bring that different perspective than what I can bring. But it's a reminder that we feel like a family. We feel like a family together. And honestly, at some of these conventions or some of these gatherings around people with epilepsy, we know what the pain is like, and we hope that the book is encouraging people to identify the reality of how it feels to live with some type of disease or disappointment or disability, feeling like we're trapped underwater where the current is fierce and the waves are frightening, but we don't have to swim alone. This is a community of people. This is a community of people who can help us when we need to come ashore. We can help one another, but we do not have to live in the singular. It can be in the plural. We can live this life underwater together.
The audience that you have for this book, Chris, is the obvious audience, of course, is for people with epilepsy or for people that have suffered some kind of traumatic brain injury, and for their caregivers that have to live the same life that you know, like Debbie and like the boys, they had to be a part of your disease. They had to be a part of your condition because of this. And that's the obvious audience. And that's the audience right. that can so much benefit from this. But I think that there's another audience. And I think that audience might be people that whose lives will intersect your lives or intersect the lives of people with epilepsy or traumatic brain injury that might not be as sensitized to your mm-hmm. to your reality as much as people who are closer to you. And I'm thinking about medical professionals. And I'm also thinking about just people in the community that might intersect with people with epilepsy, intersect with people with traumatic brain injury, just to give them a glimpse into the reality of those lives and to make them more sensitive to something that they might not even be aware of.
And you're so correct in that. Think about teachers from every level of education who have students in their class who have epilepsy. What do they know about it? They may know some rules and guidelines to follow, but do they know how the students feel? Think of people at various businesses. Their coworkers may have epilepsy, or people who are coming to do business with them may have epilepsy. Every doctor, my neurologist near Orlando was holding the book, and he was just talking about how important it was, and he's like, every neurologist, every main physician needs a copy of this book. And so think about it that way. Think of clergy who are leading congregations. They need to read this book so they will know how to relate better to the pains of the people that they are pastoring or shepherding. Again, business leaders, teachers, doctors, people in the government, they need to read this book so that they can understand better what others are going through. Because I'm going to tell you, when you look at the stats of how many people are coming back from war with traumatic brain injury, how many people in today's culture are living with epilepsy, the numbers are frightening. 1 in 26 people in the United States will have epilepsy at some point in their lifetime. So my goal is to remind us of how many people are a part of this story. But remember, these are not just numbers. The numbers are important for us to know because of the high volume of these people. But these are not just numbers. These are people. These are real lives with real faces, with real stories and real storms of life underwater. How can all of us relate better to people who have epilepsy? If it's 1 in 26, your neighbor has epilepsy. Some relative in your family has epilepsy. Maybe they are afraid to tell you, but this type of book will engage in the conversation. Add to those numbers the caregivers. One of the things we try to do with this book is to bring encouragement to caregivers. So we had a dear friend of mine, Dr. Blake Rackley, he's a professional counselor. He gave some great angles in several parts of the book. One is about me and how I changed. I didn't like what he said, honestly, but it was so true because this is the new me. These are my struggles. But we wanted his angle, his perspective. But then he gave a list of suggestions for caregivers. Steve, there are people, if they don't want to read the whole book, they need to just get the book and read that part. If they are caring for relatives or family members, or maybe they're helping with their parents now who have Alzheimer's, or going through a variety of health issues, if you are a caregiver, who's caring for you? Do you know about the importance of self-care? That is in this book. You feel underwater. That can help you come ashore and find some peace in the middle of your own storm.
Wow. I'm so glad, Chris, that you did this. And I know that it's a little departure from some of your other books, but it's such a book. It's a book that's so needed. It's going to touch so many lives. Just like you said, is there's so many people out there that think, am I alone in this? Am I facing this thing by myself? And just to hear your words and to see your story is going to bring them comfort as far as them knowing, no, Chris has been through this, and this is what Chris has done, and Chris is helping me through this. And to the caregivers, like you said, that are sacrificing themselves or maybe not even understanding what the things they should understand. So I think this book is going to be a tremendous help, not just to the people that suffer from epilepsy or to people that suffer from traumatic brain injury, but to the caregivers and to the people in the community to be more sensitive.
Well, in one part of the book, we wanted to speak directly to the reader, not just about us and our stories, but to the reader. And Steve, this is what I wrote. Give me time underwater, and please give me your acceptance, even when my attempts to remember or stay calm or seem normal all fail. When rough waters and fierce storms interrupt our lives, our schedules will never be the same. The ruthless waves invaded our ordinary life novel. So I think of the 1 in 26 people in the United States who have epilepsy at some time in their lives. I think of their interruptions, their seizures, their moods, their emotions. I think of their schedules, now including doctor appointments and tests and naps. And I also think of you. I wonder, who is reading this, and what is his or her story? What is your storm? What interrupted your calm swim near the shore? What has taken you deep into frightening portions of unfamiliar territory?
Well, I have a confession, Chris. When we first met and first started working together, and I started working as your publisher, there were times when I'd get irritated with you because I'd get a text from you, and then 5 minutes later I'd get another text from you, and then a half an hour later I'd get another text from you, and then you'd want to be asking something about the book, or about whatever we were working on. And instead of going through the regular channels, like, hey, you need to go online and go to our project management platform, and you need, as an author, you weren't doing that. You were just sending me a text. And I would get irritated that this guy, you know, I'm trying to work, and I've got these systems set up, trying to, you know, I've got a lot of authors, and this guy keeps texting me. Every time he has an idea, I get a text. Or every time he has a thought, I get a text. And I'd get irritated thinking, how come he's not following the rules? And then as I got to know you, and as we got to become friends and work more closely together, I realized Chris sends me the texts because if he doesn't do it then, it won't be there any longer. It'll be gone.
Right.
And once I understood that, then when I started getting texts from you, I would be the guy that write it down. I would be the guy to put it into the system because I know, hey, Chris gave this to me. It's important to him. And if I don't respond to it now, he won't be able to follow up with me to make sure I did that. So that's right. My confession to you. But that's a way that I learned as a member outside the community to learn to be sensitive to these are the new rules for relationship. These are the new rules for how to operate with Chris. And that really helped me be sensitive, not just to you, but to others as well, because then I could start thinking with those other eyes. I can start seeing with those other eyes and realizing, stop for a minute, be patient and listen, and maybe you'll understand that other person better.
And often we're afraid to ask people what we can do better to work with them. We need to ask those questions. Let's not be afraid to raise the issue and to bring up the subject. Okay, Chris, you're going through this. Some of these areas are difficult for you. How can I help? How can we work together better so that I can assist you and we can partner? Because those of us with brain damage, we think differently. And people assume that getting better would equal becoming normal. Well, our normal and our good is not going to be the same as that of other people. And we have to be willing to face that. So many people with learning disabilities in schools, and we're still using the same method to teach them that we do everybody else. We need to be sensitive to how people learn, how they can remember, and how we can engage in dialogue with them so they do not feel so alone. And they can take steps toward improvement. I keep thinking of when I had to go through speech therapy. That was embarrassing to me, Steve. Writing this book was painfully embarrassing, but it was also painfully healing. Think of how I felt going back and reading my medical reports, my psychological reports. Okay, I work now with college students, and because of my mental condition now, I may not even be able to graduate from a college if I was a student now because of my learning skill. That was difficult to read and to realize that's talking about me, but I needed to be in that mood of reality, that painful healing reality as I wrote the book, because it is sad to be underwater, but it makes you so glad to know that you're accepted and loved and others will be there to rescue you when they need to.
Wow. Yeah. Well, three things I want people to know, Chris. And I think they can find these all in the same place. I want people to know how to get your book, and I want people to know how to get your book from you. They can buy your book on Amazon. They can buy your book in a store. They can buy your book from, you know, online at several different places. But I really want them to buy the book from you, because I want that personal connection to be there. You might not be there directly, but I want there to be a connection to you and to your story and to your world. So number one, where can people get your book? Number two, you've done a video on this, which is a good video on it. Just a short video, but it gives people a perspective and a lens, and you're on it, so they'll get to know you as a person. And I want them to come out of this knowing who Chris Maxwell is. And thirdly, I want them to listen to that song. I want them to listen to that song that Taylor wrote, and, you know, download it, keep it in their phone. Where can they do that?
Okay, they can just go to my website, chrismaxwell.me. Again, that's chrismaxwell.me is the website. It has the video in there that's promoting Underwater. They can go to the Pause with Chris Maxwell Facebook group. I'm on Twitter at cmaxman, C-M-A-X-M-A-N, on Twitter, cmaxman, and we will use quotes from Underwater in there and then some of my crazy remarks from time to time as I tweet what's going on in my mind. But and if people want to contact me, they can contact me through those sites. Go to my website, send me a note, invite me to come and speak at your school, at your business, at your church, with your athletic team, in a variety of places. I would love to go and speak. I'm doing a lot of traveling and speaking now, just go through go to the music sites and find Taylor Maxwell and his song Underwater. And I think you'll enjoy listening to not just that song, but some other songs by Taylor Maxwell.
And all these links will be on the Christian Book Show, on Chris's page on the Christian Book Show. But when you get there, go to chrismaxwell.me, and you should be able to find everything there. And one thing you brought up, Chris, that I didn't bring up, you speak all over the world as both an epilepsy advocate. You do a lot of that. You work with, I don't know if we should say it here, but you work on behalf of the epilepsy community all over the world, and you speak professionally as a minister and an author, and you're a good speaker. As a matter of fact, you invited me to a college just this week that I was able to hear you speak again. So people and organizations that would like a speaker, they'd like to know more about this, you really can't get more engaging than Chris Maxwell. And I would really, really urge you to have Chris Maxwell come speak. Thank you, Chris, so much for your time.
Too.
Yep, we appreciate this. And again, Underwater, when encephalitis, traumatic brain injury, and epilepsy change everything, it's a very easy read, not easy emotionally, but easy on your vocabulary, and it's not a long read. Sometimes it can be a difficult read emotionally, but it will leave you a changed person. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate you, my friend.
You've been listening to The Christian Book Show. To learn more about the author and the book featured in this interview, visit christianbookshow.com. No spaces, no dashes. That's christianbookshow.com for show notes on this interview. And be sure to subscribe so you won't miss the next interview.